But let's bring in Emily Kaplan into the conversation. Follow her on Twitter, at Emily M. Kaplan, courtesy of ESPN's NHL coverage and also the ESPN on Ice podcast with Greg Wyshynski. Emily, always a pleasure getting you on the show. How's this Wednesday treating you? I know you've been at Blackhawks skate.
Yeah, you know what? I did a bit of an East Coast tour last week, and I haven't checked in on the Blackhawks yet, so I was there at practice today. Everything's going according to plan. I got really jealous, though, because they were all about to get onto a plane to Prague tomorrow, and I'm not.
Oh, man. Prague, have you been
there? Yeah,
to
I know. Rough.
Right. Have you been there before?
No, they're also going to Berlin, though, and I have been to Berlin, which is awesome, but no one seemed to want my recommendations. I think they've got their own itinerary.
Yeah, they may have all that figured out. And you know, one of the storylines that just came out, and we'll get to some of the contracts and stuff, but some news from Seattle's front. I mean, Cammy Granato has been added to the scouting department there as well, and we've seen Seattle so far with some of their hires be a bit progressive, it seems. And what do you make of that and some of the other additions they've made to that group?
It really just fits their theme of thinking outside the box and not doing things the way it's always been done just because. Like, Ron Francis told me that was one thing that was stressed to him when he was interviewed, and he was encouraged to keep it going. So, you know, they were looking for scouts in different NHL cities. They're trying to keep costs down, which, you know, kind of sounds funny to us, but they've only hired 5, and Francis and AGM, Ricky Olczyk, will also be part of the scouting staff this year. But they need someone in the Vancouver area. Cammy's name came up. They asked her if she was interested. She's had other opportunities in the past, but this is just the right timing. So it's really cool. She will be at Canucks games all year. She's scouting the Western Conference. She's analyzing players and projecting them for the expansion draft. And, you know, she's not the first female scout. Noelle Needham was in Toronto. She's the first female pro scout. Mm-hmm. But it just shows, you know, you think of a young girl who might not have known this opportunity was possible and thinking, what can I do outside of hockey or to, you know, once I'm done playing, or what can I do to stay in the game? And if they see this, now they have inspiration.
Very well qualified for the job, of course. We know that much about Cammy Granato and her incredible resume. Hopefully this opens the door for more opportunities like this across the NHL. Do you think teams will look at this and think, you know, why aren't we doing this? Like, it's about finding the best people for the job. It doesn't matter. At least it shouldn't matter what gender they're going to be.
Yeah, I would hope so. And, you know, one of the things that people always bring up is that it's an old boys club. Well, you think of how scouts are typically hired. It's usually word of mouth recommendations. And I'd be remiss not to mention that Granato's husband is Ray Ferraro, mm-hmm. who played with Ron Francis with the Whalers. So, like, there is clearly a connection there. But that's why what Toronto did was so unique in hiring Noelle Needham. Again, she was recommended by somebody, but they did a blind audition. She entered her scouting report with 5 other candidates, and no one had their name on top. So they were really judging off their body of work. And the reason I bring that up is I think that's unique and that's special, and I hope more teams start doing that to eliminate some bias. And I also hope that more women just reach out themselves and are encouraged to apply for these jobs, because in the past they didn't think this is something that they could do.
Elsewhere in Calgary, we hear this morning Matthew Tkachuk finally signs his contract extension, a bridge deal, 3 years, $7 million per. And anytime you see a deal like an RFA signing one here, Emily, I'm always curious, like, which side won? Was it player and agent, or did the team get the best of the player here? Where do you come out on which side maybe walked away with a better deal in their back pocket?
Honestly, I don't know. I think this one is a win-win. You know, he's the highest paid Flames player, so that's a win for Matthew Tkachuk. At the same time, they didn't totally have to break the bank, and in 3 years, you know, walks him to an okay age where maybe they can re-sign him as well. So I honestly think it worked out well. You know, if they're going bridge deal, it just makes sense. Bad hot take. Sorry.
We're talking to Emily Kaplan from ESPN's NHL coverage here on Sportsnet 650. It is Canucks game day, hosting the Ottawa Senators in the preseason. But as far as the bridge deal goes, it's something, a trend we've seen throughout the National Hockey League, because it seems the valuation on those long-term deals is really difficult for teams and the agents and player side to come to an agreement. We've seen a couple of those. Marner, of course, signed his big deal. Konechny and Ivan Provorov signed their long deals. But it's been really difficult for everybody else to figure out that long-term extension. And how much of that do you think is predicated on the fact that the CBA is going to run out in a couple of years? It's kind of uncertain about how high the cap might go up. Why do you think it's been so difficult for these teams to lock these guys
up? I think it's all of those reasons. I also think, you know, we're just in a time of transition in the way we're looking at contracts. Different things are coming into vogue. Sorry, I was getting another call. You know, for example, you see these monster contracts now coming off of guys coming off their entry-level deals. That's something new, and teams just have to prepare for it. So, you know, I think it's guys having this new mindset of wanting to bet on themselves. I do think that, yes, everyone is waiting to see what this new US TV deal looks like, if the cap is going to go up as expected, coinciding with that. So all those things together, and that's why it's the year of the bridge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw Brock Besser sign his bridge deal, and of course, Brock Besser's also injured after getting hit from behind by Chris Tierney, who would head first into the boards. And I know you've done a great story on Brock Besser and his rise to prominence, everything he's gone through, and he's also a player that has not had a healthy offseason. And we kept talking about that, Emily, and saying, okay, maybe this year, finally signed his deal. He can start the season healthy, get that time. But now he has a concussion, and we're not sure he plays in that first game of the season. And considering your conversations with Brock, like, how do you think he's going to bounce back from this?
Yeah, that kid is resilient. He's been through so much before. And I just want to talk about that hit for a second. I've seen it. I don't know if Tierney's going to get suspended, but it just feels like one of those hits the league wants to get out. You know, Tierney had a couple feet before he, you know, got out of the way for Brock. Brock's head was turned away from him. I'd like to see some kind of suspension because I just think it's unlucky. But, you know, getting just talked to Brock last summer and knowing a little bit about him, he'll be fine. He's so beloved in that room. He's got such a great support system. I just hate to see that in the game.
Does it bring us to the conversation of whether or not preseason needs to be shortened in the NHL? I mean, in the NFL, it's a regular thing where now we're seeing some guys, they don't even play throughout the preseason because there is always that risk of injury. And you, maybe if you're a veteran, more established, you just feel like it's not necessary to get you prepared for game one. How important do you think it is for certain guys to be playing as many preseason games as they currently do in the NHL?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that argument. I don't think that we're going to see any huge reform with preseason anytime soon. I actually do think it's important. I know we in the media kind of roll our eyes and sometimes fans roll our eyes and we're like, oh my God, like another preseason game. But this is a huge opportunity for the coaching staff and the hockey operations to evaluate some of the young players. It's also an opportunity for some players to get back into it and feel their feet again. Like, you saw what a big deal it was. Everyone was freaking out that Connor McDavid was going to play in his first preseason game after, you know, the way his season ended health-wise. Like, that's important for him to, you know, get out there. So, you know, for some players, maybe they do sit out. But I am kind of in the camp where I don't think we need a huge reform here.
On the heels of the Kachuk signing this morning, I guess all of our eyes now focus on Winnipeg and what's going to happen with Laine and Connor. If Patrick Laine wants a bridge deal, he's got some really good examples in the recent weeks of you know, his peers signing bridge deals. Do you think this is something that gets wrapped up here pretty quickly, or do we see more of a holdout situation as the regular season's only a week away?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea with Laine. You know, you hear some leaks and you see the reports coming out. You don't know how they're translated into English about, you know, and it's also his sense of humor that I think doesn't quite translate onto print. If he's really disgruntled with what's going on. I know my buddy Sammy Hoffman is a great reporter who's Finnish. He told me he's going to Switzerland right now to go meet with him and Rotten. And I just am so curious to check Sammy and say, like, where are they at? Because I know he'll get to the bottom of it. But look, I think Winnipeg now, especially with so much uncertainty with Dustin Byfuglien, would like to get these guys signed. They now have the cap space to do so, especially, you know, as Byfuglien suspended by that technicality. I expect Connor to sign sometime soon. Laine, I couldn't tell you.
Well, and that's going to be the interesting part, right? Because what happens with Laine? Do we see a team, like, because Elliot Friedman mentioned on our radio station yesterday when he joined Walker and Rintel in the afternoon, like, keep an eye on Columbus. They're a team that's not afraid of doing something. They have tons of cap space because of the departures they've had, and a guy like Jarmo Kekalainen isn't afraid of doing something bold. How surprised would you be if we see a team like Columbus try something with Laine?
Not surprised at all. And Columbus is the team I was hearing all summer was investigating. I don't know how close they got, but investigating offer sheets from some of the other RFAs. Of course, everyone's going to make that Finnish connection where Jarmo would love to get a great Finnish player. And I'm sure he would. But look, that team could just use some talent and they have the cap space. So, no, I would not be shocked at all. Jarmo is the guy that kind of beats to his own drum in the best way possible because he makes the NHL fun. So I'd love to see him do it. And Jarmo, if you listen to the station, go do it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And we saw one trade go down yesterday, of course, the Blues and the Carolina Hurricanes. Justin Falk is now a member of the Blues. And then Dominic Bach, a prospect that has a lot of talent, and Joel Edmondson going to the Carolina Hurricanes. But as far as the Blues are concerned with this move, what do you think this means for Pietrangelo beyond this season, who's a UFA after this year?
it definitely is a little bit murkier than it was. You know, we always assumed that Pietrangelo, the captain, the great defensive player for them, would obviously reside on a long-term deal there. And now you see the money and term they've committed to Justin Falk, and you're like, well, you know, maybe they don't have to. What's most interesting about Falk's deal to me, by the way, is that he signed for more than 4 years, four more years than anyone else on that roster. Like, that's the guy they're committing to. I know there's no movement clauses in the beginning of it, and it's also front-loaded. But yeah, I think it's just a bit murkier. You know, I wouldn't discount him resigning there. I also wouldn't discount him maybe finding a new home. So we shall see how it plays out, but it definitely makes that team a little more interesting.
I think we all understand that division is the most competitive when we sort of project lineups and see, okay, which team looks like they're going to be playoff favorites. Nashville, you can't count them out. Dallas tried to improve. Same with Minnesota. Who do you handicap right now, Emily, as being the top dog in the Central?
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, it's going to be a dogfight. Like,
yeah.
I just think about all of this and, like, you know, you want to say Dallas because they made so many moves. You want to say Colorado because we saw the way they ended last season and get Cale Makar. But, like, look at Minnesota. Everyone's discounting them because they didn't have a great year. But, like, they could easily be in it. So if I had to pick a favorite, maybe I would say Nashville just because they've got that veteran roster. They've got that urgency to win. They finally shored up that second center spot, which was so important for them to do. But honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if it was anyone. If Chicago won, like, would you be shocked? Probably, but it's not implausible.
It's really not. I mean, we know they have tons of goal-scoring forwards and a defense that's starting to get a little younger, too. But, okay, you mentioned Minnesota. Jared Spurgeon signs his contract. Is that something that is maybe also holding up the Pietrangelo situation there? Simply because if you look at the money that are being spent on defensemen and look ahead to the UFA market in 2020, maybe it's Pietrangelo's team saying, like, you know what, maybe it's best if we wait and see what kind of offers are out there. We could be talking $8-9 million for us, and maybe that's something St. Louis just can't afford.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to be really interesting. You know, I think of another defenseman who probably could get paid a lot this summer if he wanted to, and that's Torrey Krug. Although I have the inkling, and he actually told me as such, that he would take less money to stay in Boston, because that's what Boston athletes do. But yeah, it's all about who sets the market. So I think Pietrangelo would be happy just to take a wait-and-see approach, you know, see how the season goes. And I also don't know him that well. I don't know how committed he is to saying, like, hey, it's important for me to stay with this team for family reasons or because this is my team and this is where I won the Stanley Cup.
One thing I did want to kind of circle back to, you mentioned the Chicago Blackhawks, Emily, and they have some young players. And one player I'm very interested to see is Adam Boqvist. And he's really impressed in camp, too. He's so talented and, you know, he was a player directly taken after the Canucks drafted Quinn Hughes, of course. So you start looking at Quinn Hughes, you look at Adam Boqvist, and we know that Rasmus Dahlin was incredible as a rookie, and he was the first overall pick. Evan Bouchard, well, he couldn't even make the Edmonton Oilers. And he's young, we'll see what happens, but he just got sent down to Bakersfield. How interesting do you think that whole conversation around the second-best defenseman out of the 2018 class could be?
Yeah, sorry, you're cutting out a bit, but I know the question is about Boqvist, and I do know that Dan Bowman was talking about him today, saying he's improved a lot this summer than when he came to the last summer even. And the offensive ability is very, very clear. We saw that at the Traverse City tournament. We've seen it, you know, from what I've heard at camp, he looks terrific. The problem is that he's still adjusting to North American ranks, and he still is a little bit of a defensive liability. So my guess is that he starts in the A. He gets a couple reps there. I would not be shocked. In fact, I expect him to get called up at some point this year.
She is Emily Kaplan. Follow her on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. Also the ESPN on Ice podcast with Greg Wyshynski. Too bad we can't send you to Prague, but we look forward to hopefully seeing you in Vancouver soon. And we'll talk to you next week when the regular season is finally here, Emily.
I love it. Thanks, guys.
Sportsnet 650.